This Frontenas podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. This is Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. When we think of popular figures in the Chicano movement, some names famously come to mind, including Cesar Chavez, maybe voting rights activist Willy Velazquez, or even boxer and poet Rodolfo Corky Gonzalez. Whose names come to mind when you think of Chicana activists? Dolores Huerta, no doubt. But have you ever heard of poet and scholar Gloria Anzaldúa? What about writer Martha Cotera or welfare activist Alicia Escalante? These are women whose stories are told in Chicana Movidas, new narratives of activism and feminism in the movement era. The book is a collection of essays written by Chicanas about Chicanas and the moves, movidas, they made to advance their unique brand of feminism. We're joined on Fronteras today by one of the book's co-editors, Maria Eugenia Cotera, an associate professor of American Studies and Women's Studies at the University of Michigan, where she's also director of the Latino Studies Program. The other co-editors of the book are Dion Espinosa and Maylee Blackwell. Also joining us today is Norma Elia Cantú, the Murchison Distinguished Professor of the Humanities at Trinity University's Department of Modern Languages and Literatures. Cantú has been using the book in her classes. Cotera, joining us by phone from Michigan, explains why she and her co-editors named the book Chicana Movidas.
Part of the genesis of that title comes from this idea of Chicanas working kind of under the surface, working to support movement activities, working to strategize and negotiate the complex positions they found themselves in, where they were challenging very entrenched ideas about gender and what women could do. And so they had to make these moves, sort of like strategic. And then we were thinking also about an important quote, which we start the book with, from Gloria Anzaldúa. You know, she's a preeminent scholar of borderlands feminism and Chicana feminist thought. You know, we are engaged in small-scale movimientos with a little M, movidas, moving in and through various movement identities and structures. So, you know, a lot of the women we document in the book, for example, worked within white feminist spaces and within Chicano male-dominated spaces. Or they worked in environmental justice, farm worker movements, and other kinds of urban political movements or student movements. So we really wanted to capture this sense of movement, and Movidas kind of suggested that, but also of subversive activity, because Movidas has a colloquial meaning or significance in our culture as kind of being something undercover, not always nice, you know, tricky. So we felt that Chicana Movidas really kind of captured that.
You know, looking through the book, I thought it was pretty fascinating to know that Chicanas who were trying to make their voices heard within the movement were actually experiencing their own sense of sexism within the movement from other Chicanos. Norma, have you experienced anything like that in your own experience?
Wow, yes. Who hasn't? If you live in this country, yes. Yeah. Especially, I think, back in the 60s, it was pretty much common practice to exclude the feminist or the radical feminist or lesbian voices from our discourse. And in spaces where we came together, I think the movidas were best exemplified. In the quote that Maria is referring to from Anzaldúa, she says, you know, we have not one movement, but many. We had to find a way to create a space for our discourse, for our issues, for our movimiento to be inserted into the more patriarchal movimiento that was there. So, yes.
And so another thing that I noticed, Maria, was that the Chicana feminists also encounter discrimination of sorts from other white feminists.
Yeah, I think the essay that really captures this is Marta Cotera's essay, My Mother. full disclosure, my mother is a contributor to the book and indeed one of the women who is known as one of those sort of early Chicana feminists really out there with, you know, saying feminism was not an alien agenda coming from, you know, the white bourgeoisie, but it was something that was really significant and historically foundational for Mexican American women. But in her essay, she talks about organizing that happened around the International Women's Year Conference in 1977 in Houston, Texas. And she gives us a kind of blow-by-blow account of how Chicanas had to work around, you know, mainstream white feminists who really not just wanted to undercut or sort of marginalize a woman of color agenda at that conference, but who also were not as sort of committed to a woman's agenda as the women of color, and particularly the Chicanas at that conference. So I think it's safe to say, as Norma has suggested, that, you know, the reality was in the 1960s and 1970s, all women were dealing with sexism that was structural and very real. So women could not open accounts in their own names.
You couldn't buy a car in their own names. I had to get my dad to sign for me.
My mother, when she set up her business, could not get a telephone line put into her business without my father signing off on it. And so the sexism was not exclusive to the Chicano movement. It was, in fact, permeating all society, right? But it was particular in the Chicano movement. I think racism, too, was structural. And racism was experienced in particular ways by women of color trying to work with white women who had very, at that time, very classist and racist ideas about Chicanas and Black women and Asian American women and Native American women that they really had to struggle with. So in both of these movements, I think Chicanas were dealing with overarching structural racism and sexism and classism and really having to negotiate that in complex ways, which is what we hope to chart in the book and the various essays and contributions.
Well, Norma, you brought it up in one of your previous answers that not only was it just Chicanas, but Chicana lesbians who were also fighting for recognition. And I thought that was really interesting because not only were Chicanas just alone experiencing that sense of discrimination, but then you have this other branch of Chicanas, they're gay. That's a whole other story right there. And yet back in the times you're talking about, the 60s, 70s, just to be gay, period, was a mark, a black mark against you. What was the extra struggle that you saw that Chicana lesbians had to overcome?
A lot of the movidas that were done within even the feminist movement, white or people of color, I think the book that opened up some of that was This Bridge Called My Back, co-edited by Gloria Anzaldú and Cherry Moraga. The subtitle tells it. So it's writings by radical women of color. And so it's opening up the discussion, entering into a larger discourse as lesbians, some of them, not all of them in the book are, but pushing that forward. The added discriminatory practices against lesbians would include things like not getting published or not being in conferences that were for the larger group, for Chicanos and Chicanas. It was a double mark then if you were lesbian. So you didn't have access to a forum to come in, to say things, to publish things. It was illegal, actually, to be gay. So, of course, you're going to have some of that.
So many Chicanas who articulated a feminist ideology or agenda within the Chicano movement were lesbian baited because feminism was associated with lesbianism and it was a way of silencing feminism. So I think these two really kind of interconnect. And I do want to just point out that one of the really important interventions of the collection is that we try to include and incorporate a lesbiana voice into the collection through memoir and through some of the essays so that that voice is no longer marginalized from the story about how Chicana feminism develops and spread.
And one essay where that happens, it actually isn't an essay, it's an interview with Gloria Anzaldúa, who traces her own trajectory within the movimiento and all the movidas that she had to go through from here in Texas all the way to Indiana, back to Texas, New York, California. It's a wonderful interview conducted by one of the co-editors, Maile Blackwell.
And it is a beautiful interview and gives a really, I think, a kind of inside picture of Gloria's, you know, strategies and movidas that is quite unique, I would say.
That's Maria Cotera, co-editor of the collection Chicana Movidas, New Narratives of Activism and Feminism in the Movement Era. We're also talking with Norma Elia Cantú, the Murchison Distinguished Professor of the Humanities at Trinity University in San Antonio. When we come back...
So this is an excellent example of how Chicanas sort of, you know, move up and into... organizing.
That example is coming up next on Fronteras as we continue our conversation with Maria Cotera and Norma Cantú. Stay with us. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Chicana feminists faced discrimination in the 60s and 70s among their fellow Chicanos and white feminists, but they still manage to make their voices heard. Those voices are shared in Chicana Movidas, New Narratives of Activism and Feminism in the Movement Era. It's a collection of essays written by Chicana scholars and activists about the women who made important movidas, moves, within the movement. Maria Eugenia Cotera is a co-editor of the book, along with Dion Espinosa and Maile Blackwell. Cotera and Norma Cantú, a professor at Trinity University at San Antonio, are talking with us today about some of those important women. I asked Cotera about which characters stood out the most.
Well, you know, it's not fair because my mother's in the book. And, you know, and she's always really speaking to me, let me tell you, in all the ways that mothers do. Marta Cotera and Ana Nieto Gómez, both well recognized as early feminist innovators, right, from the early 1970s, articulating a feminist voice inside the Chicano movement. We wanted to give those women a chance to write essays of their choice. And what's so interesting is Marta wrote a kind of, like I said, a blow-by-blow essay for how Chicanas organized inside spaces that were not necessarily hospitable. And it's fascinating. Because if you want a playbook on how to, you know, negotiate dominant spaces where the conversation that's being constructed does not include you or your agenda, that is the essay to go to. And Ana Nieto Gómez, well, she published the first Chicana newspaper, Hijas de Cuauhtémoc, and the first Chicana journal, Encuentro Femenil. She didn't write about herself. She wrote about a woman who came before her, Francisca Flores, who was a publisher of various newsletters and magazines in the Los Angeles area and an early supporter of Chicana feminists who are trying to develop an agenda that combined, you know, a critique of racism and a critique of sexism and classism. I love an essay that is about a radio station that Chicanas built in the Pacific Northwest in Washington, a space we don't usually associate with the Chicano movement, but that essay is really interesting about the ways in which Chicanas built and sustained this radio station. Well, there's so many.
That's a great story because they were telling stories of people whose voices were not heard but were seen, and those were the farm workers. And I thought that was fascinating. They would have interviews with farm workers. You would hear their voices, and you would hear their concerns on the radio, which is a voice that reached so many more people outside of the fields. You know what I also thought was fascinating within the book? All the other movidas, for example, there were Chicanas within the Catholic Church who were making their own movidas. One woman in particular got a divorce. Her priest frowned upon it, and she was like, I don't know what your problem is, but I think I did the right thing. So I love that you have these people who are speaking with their own voice, yet are still devoted to, you know, the Catholic Church or whatever their belief system may be rotating around. And I also love the stories of Esther Hernandez, the artist who was making movidas in the world of art. And I know our listeners can't see the art right now. Hopefully we can put some of the images online. But could you describe some of the really interesting artwork that's included in the book?
There are two that are my favorites of Esther's work. And one is titled La Virgen de Guadalupe Defendiendo los Derechos de las Chicanas. And I love that. It's from the mid-1970s. And to see the depiction of the Virgen being not just submissive and quiet, but actually dressed as if she's doing martial arts.
She's karate chopping, basically.
And there's another one called Libertad, and it's Esther's depiction of the Statue of Liberty, but there's a Chicana sculpting the bottom part. Aslan is written at the very base, and it is an indigenous sculpture, and it is just fabulous. The other one is the Sun Mat Raisins. And it's the image from the raisin box,
sun made.
Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. It's a calavera. And it's just striking.
So beautiful.
And yes. That was, I think, in response to her experience as a farm worker.
Exactly.
And all the dangers that were in place for farm workers who were harvesting the grapes that would become these raisins. So, again, a nice political message in there. I have to say my favorite was the Wanted Virgen de Guadalupe mugshot. That was terrific.
Yes.
Could you describe it? I know you've got the image there in front
of you. Well, it's a wanted sign, and under it, it says wanted, and then it says terrorist, La Virgen de Guadalupe, alias Guadalupe, Reina de las Américas, Virgencita, Nuestra Madre, Tonantzin, Lupe, Lupita. And then there's two shots, just like a mugshot. Should be considered powerful and dangerous.
You know, I would argue that there are many Mexican-American women out there who would view the Virgen de Guadalupe as a feminist icon.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. For a lot of us, the Virgen is a shiro. She's the one that we call on and who guides us, and that I think signifies that power, feminist power.
Well, Maria, what other women featured in your book do you think deserve a mention?
Well, all of them.
We don't have time for them all.
I know. There's 22 chapters, so I won't put you through that. But of course, you know, Alicia Escalante. Mm-hmm. She was a welfare rights organizer. By the way, you know, in the early 1960s, she herself was on welfare. Her husband was in prison. She was raising 5 children on her own. She was living in the projects. And she got involved when the first attacks on welfare as a system began to emerge in California. So her story basically is that she goes on to get involved with the National Welfare Rights Organization, which at the time was run by men, ironically, and gets involved with Black women who are organizing in welfare, and then creates her own East LA Welfare Rights Organization because, you know, she really wanted to address the women, particularly Spanish-speaking women, their needs, which were not being addressed by the National Welfare Rights Organization. So this is an excellent example of how Chicanas sort of, you know, move up and into organizing. And when dominant forms of organizing or dominant ideas about the person that the organizing is helping aren't fitting with what they see as the problem on the ground, you know, they go out and forge their own approaches. And Alicia Escalante is an excellent example of this.
And I think her backstory is actually fascinating because she lived in El Paso with her father. Yeah. Her mother had to leave the family. And the father, because he was the only one who could support the children, was the one who was in custody of them. At the age of 9, Alicia hopped a train to get away from her abusive father, to be with her mother in California. And so she witnessed her mother struggling on welfare. And in a way, it was almost ironic that she herself ended up on welfare. But she knew exactly how to affect change from her experience as a child.
That's right. And I just want to point out that Rosie Bermudez, who was the author of that piece, beautiful piece, herself grew up with a mom on welfare. You know, and she writes this in her essay, like her connection with Alicia, you know, she was just very interested in her organizing tactics, but also deeply personal. You know, that is the other thing that distinguishes many of our essays, is that these are not just academic or scholarly essays that we're producing as scholars, but deeply personal. They involve valences that surpass the scholarly or the academic.
That's another aspect of the book, that often the essays are co-authored or involved mm-hmm. interviews, so that you don't have just one person leading the charge, but it's a collaboration, just like the co-editing is a collaboration. And these three women I respect as scholars, but I think they have created a document in this book that is for the ages. It's for generations to come.
We've been speaking with Norma Elia Cantú, Murchison Distinguished Professor of the Humanities at Trinity University's Department of Modern Languages and Literatures. Also joining us today was Maria Eugenia Cotera, co-editor of Chicana Movidas, New Narratives of Activism and Feminism in the Movement Era. Cotera is also an associate professor of American Studies and Women's Studies at the University of Michigan, where she's also director of the Latino Studies Program. Chicana Movidas is co-edited by Dion Espinosa and Maylee Blackwell. To hear more of our conversation, including the exhaustive research conducted by the book's editors and how a digital storytelling project will further expand that research, go to tpr.org. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz, and our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.